Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Crime and Crime Again discusses true crime stories that may contain disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised. In this episode, I will be discussing acts of violence against women, such as sexual assault and homicide. Please proceed with caution. Hi everyone, I am back. I took a couple of weeks off of creating any episodes because life got very chaotic very quickly. I have moved into a new place, a new little apartment, and I also just started a new job. So a couple of good little things that have happened in the past couple of weeks. So because of this move and starting a new job, my schedule has been very busy the past couple of weeks since my last episode. So I didn't have any time to research any cases or record or edit. But now I am finding more time to do that. We're situating ourselves into a good schedule. So hopefully I will be able to continue sticking with my weekly upload schedule for episodes. So today we'll be talking about the case of Jennifer Servo, who was a 22-year-old news anchor in Abilene, Texas. She was murdered in her home in the early hours of September 16th, 2002. So without further ado, let's get right into the case. Jennifer Lynn Servo was born on September 23rd, 1979, in Columbia Falls, Montana, which is where she grew up and spent most of her life. Jennifer developed a love for writing in high school, and many say that she had a natural talent. This love of writing sparked her dreams of journalism. She often talked of her aspirations of being the next Katie Couric. During the summer after her junior year of high school, Jennifer joined the Army Reserves to help toward her upcoming college tuition. After high school, she attended the University of Montana in Missoula to study and pursue journalism. While in college, she worked as an intern at KECI, which was a small television station in Missoula. In May of 2002, Jennifer graduated from the university and earned her degree, and she was quickly hired at KRBC, a news station in Abilene, Texas. She packed up and moved to Abilene in July of 2002. Jennifer had been described as outgoing and free-spirited, so by all accounts, she was incredibly excited about this move and starting this new chapter of her life in a brand new place. She had dreams of eventually moving to New York and working for a large network. According to those close to her, Jennifer was genuinely happy at her new job. She was well-liked by her coworkers and had made friends with several of them. From my research, it seemed that anyone who knew or worked with Jennifer saw immediately that she was truly up-and-coming as a news anchor and that her career had the tremendous potential to blossom. There isn't really much that's known about Jennifer's personal life or her life before graduating from college and moving to Abilene, so we don't really know much about her childhood or any of that, so there's not much of that to discuss. So because of that, we can go ahead and get right into the night of her murder. On September 15th, 2002, Jennifer worked a long shift at KRBC and left sometime around or after 10 p.m. After leaving work, she headed to the grocery store with one of her coworkers, a weatherman named Brian Travers. Security cameras captured the two at the grocery store around 10:45 p.m. Jennifer was actually scheduled to have a few days off of work, but on September 17th, her boss attempted to call her to see if she could come into work as they were shorthanded that day. However, there was no answer when he called her home, which he thought was strange. He tried calling her again on September 18th, but again, there was no response. Jennifer's mother, Sherry, also hadn't heard from her in a few days, and there was no answer when she tried calling. Immediately, Sherry felt a degree of concern, as it was unlike Jennifer to ignore phone calls and to not keep in touch with her mother. Out of concern, two of Jennifer's coworkers, Jennifer Lauren and Brian Travers, with whom Jennifer had been captured on security cameras at a grocery store days prior, drove to Jennifer's apartment to check on her. They noted that the blinds were down and closed, which was odd because Jennifer typically kept the blinds open so that her cat could see outside. On September 18th, Jennifer's boss at KRBC called her apartment complex and asked them to conduct a welfare check. Soon after, coworkers at KRBC heard on the police scanner that there was police activity at Jennifer's apartment. There had been a call about a potential DOA on the scene. On September 18th, 2002, it was confirmed that Jennifer Servo had been found deceased in her apartment. Jennifer had been sexually assaulted and strangled, and there was evidence of blunt force trauma to her head. Numerous bloodstains were found throughout the apartment, and her purse and her phone were not at the scene and could never be located. No murder weapon was ever found. Something else of note about the crime scene was that there was no sign of forced entry into the home. According to family, Jennifer was incredibly diligent about safety and would not have allowed a stranger into her home, especially not so late at night. In an effort to determine who Jennifer may have had last contact with, police began to dig through her communications. Her phone records from that night were examined, and it was discovered that around 12:30 a.m. on September 16th, she had returned home from grocery shopping and had a phone conversation with a man named Dave Warren. Dave Warren was an ex-boyfriend of Jennifer's. The two had previously dated for quite some time. Though they were no longer romantically involved, they had remained good friends and kept in frequent contact. Upon speaking with Dave, it's learned that there was nothing out of the ordinary or suspicious about the conversation they had on the phone that night. Police were able to confirm that Dave was in Montana, over 1,000 miles away at the time of Jennifer's death. There was, however, some useful information gleaned from the discovery of this phone call. Based on the time that the call had been made, as well as the length of the call, investigators determined that Jennifer's killer must have arrived and killed her sometime after 1:30 a.m. Of course, because Brian Travers was the last person confirmed to have seen Jennifer alive, he was interviewed and investigated. Brian said that Jennifer had helped him unload groceries at his house before leaving to head home to her apartment. He also says that he went straight to bed after arriving home. Family and friends of Jennifer said that Brian seemed to them like a nice person, and that he had actually grieved with them over Jennifer's death. However, while police were interviewing him, Brian's parents hired an attorney for him. According to investigators, this did strike them as strange. It wasn't until a week after Jennifer's murder that Brian disclosed vital and suspicious information to police. He claimed that Jennifer had previously shared with him that she sometimes felt like she was being followed. In fact, he told police that on the night of September 15th, she had said that she thought a car was following them after they had left the grocery store, that it was making all of the same turns that they were. The fact that Brian had waited a week to offer up this information made police suspicious of him. They began to look at him more as a suspect than as simply a friend or a witness. It was also learned that Jennifer and Brian may have been more than friends at one point. According to friends of Jennifer's, the two had shared some form of intimacy, though it's not exactly clear what that entails. Jennifer had reportedly told a friend that whatever had happened was only a one-time thing and that she wasn't interested in pursuing anything more with Brian. Brian, however, allegedly did want more than just a friendship with Jennifer. This has never been confirmed by Brian himself.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Further forensic examination revealed that multiple DNA samples from different men were found in Jennifer's apartment. one of these DNA profiles did in fact belong to Brian Travers. Despite this, investigators could not make any further progress in the investigation, as it was well known that Brian had been in Jennifer's apartment before. Brian himself openly admitted and discussed this. Something worth noting is that there are some discrepancies regarding Jennifer and Brian's activities on the night of September 15. Some sources say that the two had taken separate cars to the grocery store, and others say that Jennifer had driven and dropped Brian off at his home. Despite this, Brian Travers was indeed cooperative with police, and there were no legitimate grounds to pursue him any further as a suspect in Jennifer's murder. There was another DNA profile found in Jennifer's apartment that sparked police interest. The DNA belonged to a man named Ralph Sepulveda, a former Army Ranger and a much more recent ex-boyfriend of Jennifer's. Jennifer met Ralph while in the Army Reserves, and when they both returned to Missoula, Montana, a romantic relationship ensued. Ralph was actually 12 years older than Jennifer. At the time of her death, she was 22 and he was 34. Jennifer's family have been very open about the fact that they never liked Ralph and never thought that he was right for her. He was often described by those close to Jennifer as being obsessive and jealous. Upon discovering Ralph's DNA in the apartment, a slew of information is unveiled that was previously unknown to investigators. Investigators learned that Ralph had actually moved to Abilene with Jennifer when she left Montana and began her new job at KRBC. The couple's new life together didn't last long, however. A few weeks after they moved to Abilene, Ralph informed Jennifer that he had actually had a fiancé back in Montana that he had left when they moved. He then drops an even bigger bomb and tells her that he has a child with this fiancé. Jennifer never knew about any of this previously. Immediately, Jennifer broke things off with Ralph and made him move out of the apartment. But instead of moving back to Montana to be with his apparent fiancé and child, Ralph does the unexpected. He moves into a place not so far from Jennifer's apartment. Friends of Jennifer's have stated that she confided to them that Ralph had certain sexual preferences that made her uncomfortable, namely, choking. There is no record that Jennifer had much, if any, contact with Ralph in the weeks leading up to her murder. Initially, Ralph was cooperative with investigators. Upon being questioned, he claimed that he hadn't seen Jennifer in 3 weeks. It was reported that he never expressed much emotion over Jennifer's death. He also didn't attend her funeral, nor did he ever send his condolences or have any contact with her family whatsoever. He eventually refused to take a polygraph test. Ralph abruptly left town, and police located him at a military base in San Antonio, Texas, about 4 hours away from Abilene. They were unable to charge Ralph with any crimes or arrest him. There just wasn't enough non-circumstantial evidence to indicate that he could have been involved in Jennifer's death. And that is all we really know about Jennifer's case. Brian and Ralph were both cleared and have not been pursued as suspects any further. No new evidence has come to light, no murder weapon has been found, her purse and her phone were never located. There just isn't enough evidence or information regarding the night of her murder to lead investigators to any new persons of interest or suspects. In January of 2003, 4 months after Jennifer's murder, her family received a letter from the University of Montana informing them that Jennifer's library account had been used to check out 4 books after her death. It was noted that her library card could likely have been inside of her purse, which was not in her apartment when she was found and has never been located. However, police eventually concluded that this was nothing more than a clerical error. I personally am not sure how much I agree with that. That just seems like too much of a coincidence. A woman is murdered, her purse is never located at the scene, and never found outside of the scene. Her library card was likely inside of her purse, and all of a sudden after her death, someone is using that card to check out 4 books. So it's a clerical error that 4 different books were checked out using a deceased woman's library card. That whole thing just does not sit right with me. In 2008, another news anchor named Ann Presley was murdered in Little Rock, Arkansas, and her murder was similar to Jennifer's in several ways. and also bore a resemblance to Jennifer. Police were able to use DNA to link a man named Curtis Vance to Ann's murder. Initially, it was thought that he could have also been involved in Jennifer's murder. However, his DNA did not match any of that found in Jennifer's apartment. The University of Montana, where Jennifer graduated, eventually created the Jennifer Servo Memorial Award, which is presented every year to a female graduating senior at the university who shows incredible potential and dedication in broadcast journalism. And that wraps it up for Jennifer's case. This episode may end up being a bit shorter than usual, maybe, maybe not, but there just isn't much information out there about this case. As always, all of my sources are listed in the show notes of this episode. Jennifer Servo was a vibrant, outgoing woman who had a remarkable talent for journalism. She was passionate and steadfast in the pursuit of her dreams, and she had an incredible career ahead of her. All of that was stolen from her. To this day, 18 years later, her family still does not have answers, and Jennifer still has not received justice. Just in case anyone's memory could possibly be jogged by listening to this episode, Jennifer Lynn Servo was murdered at her apartment sometime after 1:30 a.m. on September 16, 2002, in Abilene, Texas. If you have any information, or think you might have any information, about her case, please contact Abilene Crime Stoppers at 325-676-8477. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Crime Again Pod, and you can also like the Facebook page, Crime and Crime Again Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.
Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs. You just bought a home in the suburbs, but no one told you about all the birds, specifically this one, who seems to be calling out Roy. Roy. But who exactly is Roy? And why doesn't he ever respond? Maybe Roy is just bird speak for save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto. I guess until Roy answers, we'll never know. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers. If you're looking to move out of your parents' place, you could really cut expenses by bundling your car and renter's insurance with Progressive, which is good because your little brother has gotten really territorial. You're blood related. You'd think it would be fine to share food in the fridge. I mean, who writes their name on every individually wrapped slice of cheese, Tyler? Still, you've got to admire the commitment. So bundle your renter's and car insurance with Progressive and use the savings to help you move out and have all the cheese you want. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.